amigos, que Dale Stewart here from Spain Speaks with another podcast this week, number 15 in the series. And we're going to be having a look at some of the comments that we've received over the last 7 days or so. Joined again by John. How are you, John?
I'm good, thanks.
Had a busy week, I hear.
Yeah, very busy. Got lots of new classes with people practicing their conversation, ready for their exams.
Yep. Getting ready for the Cambridge exams and all of those things which are coming up in the next few months. Quite a big industry here in Spain now, the whole Cambridge set of exams mainly. And
yeah, I've got a lot of adults now at the moment that are studying with the official School of Languages here in Rivas, and they're studying for B2, C1. Plus, I've also got a lot of my current students asking for extra classes to prepare for their PET and KET exams.
Yeah, that's it. The KET, the PET, the first certificate, the advanced, the proficiency, all of those exams that people like to put on their CVs to prove that they speak English, because every employer in Spain asks for a high level of English.
Yeah, it's actually, if you look at some of the job offers that are around, they actually ask for English with positions that don't need English. It's getting crazy now.
Yeah. Yeah, English has become more important than a lot of other things for getting a job here. Even if they never speak the language, or they speak the language once every 6 months, they still have to have a high level. That's right. Mm. So it's quite in demand. And as you said, people studying for these official exams, right?
Because
that's what they are at the
end of the day. All official exams,
That's right. All right, good. So we'll have a look at some of the... We'll have a look at some of the comments that we received. The first one was from a guy called Kirill. Kirill is from Russia. And it's good to see that we have some other people watching and listening to the podcast that are not obviously from the UK or the US. Kirill being from Russia here. And he spent a bit of time in Valencia, and he had a couple of points that he wanted to share with us and see whether we agree or not. So the first one was that he found it very cold in his apartment. He thought that perhaps the place was a little bit old and wasn't a very energy efficient building, and not very good quality construction, let's say. This is one of the problems when you go to some of the coastal areas, John, that central heating is not in a lot of the places.
Yeah, I think you got a few problems down the coast. I had the same problem when I was living in Mallorca. You've got a lot of places that are built on the cheap, if you like. A lot of things were thrown up extremely fast, especially in the 1980s, beginning of the 90s as well. Buildings thrown up extremely quickly, not necessarily the best construction. And of course, it was just before we got all the real technology through, which improved insulation and things as well. So yeah, I think you can find a lot of buildings along the coast, especially tourist-let apartments, where you won't have central heating because it's a touristy thing and you don't really need central heating the majority of the year. So the owners don't install it. And on top of that, the insulation is quite poor in a lot of these places.
Yeah, some of those places, I know Malaga from personal experience, you get maybe a month of cold weather, but you don't get the same need for central heating that you get in a place like Madrid, obviously, or anywhere in the center of the country. Here in Madrid, every house automatically has central heating nowadays, or they have reverse cycle air conditioning built in, because, you know, here you're going to get 6 months probably of cold weather where you're going to need to put the heater on every day.
Yeah,
that's right. But on the coast, maybe you're going to get 1 month, maybe two, maybe three, I don't know, maximum. And you could probably just get by with a portable heater that you pick up from the local Carrefour or...
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really lived on the coast of Spain much, apart from Mallorca. But Mallorca was a bit of a different situation. The winter does get cold in Mallorca. I mean, where I used to live, we got snow and everything as well. But on the Valencia coast, the east coast, the southern coast as well, I mean, especially the southern coast, I mean, I think the temperatures there don't drop down quite
as... Well, you were there a couple of weeks ago. What was the weather beautiful like in Valencia?
Yeah, well, I was in Valencia last weekend, and Murcia the weekend before that. Yeah. And both cases got their coat straight off and was walking around with just a jumper on. It was pleasant. It wasn't baking hot. It wasn't cold. It was just beautiful, yeah. beautiful temperature. Probably yeah. about 23 degrees. It was yeah. lovely.
Yeah. Well, that's the same thing we have in Perth. Perth, people don't have central heating in their homes in Perth, and maybe someone has a fireplace or some type of portable heating, or maybe they have like a gas heater or something like that. But coats and gloves and scarves and all those things that you need in a place like Madrid or the rest of Europe, basically, you don't need those in Perth. And even people in Malaga, I don't think, walk around with heavy coats on. And as you said, your Madrid clothes straight off as soon as you get down there.
Yeah, it was a lot warm, a lot warmer than I was expecting, actually. I was expecting, middle of January, I was expecting it to be quite chilly.
Yeah, but it's not.
No, it's not the case, yeah. I think you do get cold days. I mean, you only have to look at the news sometimes, and all of a sudden you see that Valencia is under a foot of snow, which surprises a lot of people. So you do get cold.
That wouldn't be the coast, well. Though, that wouldn't.
Yeah, they actually had the beaches had good coating of snow. And I don't know if that was this year or last year. Yeah, I remember seeing.
Yeah, it's not common, I think, probably.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how common it is, but it definitely happens every year. They get.
I do.
They get cold enough weather to have a bit of snow here and there.
Well, that's it. So probably a good idea to invest in a heater. and the quality of the buildings is what we said before. So they popped up, during these booms, and the construction quality not quite up to scratch. One of the things that I will say with the quality of housing is that you can always hear what your neighbours are talking about a lot of the time. So I don't know if that's your case down there, because you share a wall with neighbours like we do here. And I can hear a lot of detail.
Yeah, it's something that I think the way the houses are built, they're not, you can't really compare them to the houses built in the UK. I think it's a very different build. And I've got to admit, it's something that is frustrating. We only share the wall with one other house.
Yeah, yeah. All the same. Yeah, yeah.
And you can hear everything. I mean, it's a bit of a nightmare. I think it's one of the things, if I eventually do buy my house, because at the moment I'm renting, if I eventually do buy the house, I will look at maybe...
Stick some insulation.
Insulation is fill the cavities, maybe, if that's possible in the house. Yeah. But something, because it is a bit annoying, especially on a Saturday, Sunday morning, you're sort of you're half awake, and all of a sudden you get the next door neighbour screaming, or they're sort of, I don't know, they put the TV on a bit loud or something. And you can't, it's not their fault. It's just literally, there's not enough insulation, not enough width of wall between you and next door to keep the noise out.
Thin walls, that's it. Yeah. Thin walls. Yeah, good. Now, the other thing he says here is that he had trouble to get good loose tea. Now, you're a tea drinker.
Definitely, yes.
I have a cup of tea every now and again, but I just go to the supermarket and buy a tea bag, PG chips or Lipton's you can buy, or Tetley's, did you say? Or
You can get Tetley's here. They sell Tetley's in Mercadona, I think. Yeah. I like my PG tips. So I get my PG tips in
cheap as well.
And I think Mercadona sometimes have them. Yeah. And then they're not expensive. I mean, it's not like some of the other things that, if they're from the UK or something, they're sort of tripling in price.
Yeah.
I think 40 tea bags were about €2 or something in Carrefour, about that. It's not cheap. I
mean, yeah,
cheaper in England, but obviously.
I think I bought that same box of tea bags recently, and I don't think it even probably even under €2. I think it was
€1.98 or something
like that. Wasn't expensive if you like to have a cup of tea, but loose tea is the problem. He says that Russians are tea drinkers as well, but he had trouble getting loose tea. Now there are some specialty tea shops. There is a chain called the Tea Shop.
I think it's called the Tea Shop.
It's called the Tea Shop. They do sell tea, loose tea, or as they say in Spanish, a granel. But it's a little bit expensive, I find.
Yeah, it is a bit expensive. And to be honest, the way I like my tea, I don't need to have loose tea.
I just whack a tea bag, a bit of milk, and a mug,
and off you go. But I think, people that do like to have their loose tea, especially if you like particular brands as well. One of my family members likes to mix two different types of loose tea and stuff like that as well. So, I mean, if you want that sort of thing, you need to go to a specialist shop, I think. But, I mean, the one that we've got here is, It's just got everything in it. Yeah. I mean, it's got chocolate tea and everything. It's got really weird mixes of
different,
teas.
So, different flavors. Yeah, that's right. But generally, the Spanish, it's a bit of a generalization, but they're not really tea drinkers. You know, if you go into any bar or restaurant and ask for a cup of tea, they might have a little bit of variety some places, but the rest will just have the Spanish brand of tea, which is called Horny Man.
Horny Man, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the the Spanish brand of teas. It's not bad tea, but it's not very strong. That's the problem I have. I always find it's not very strong. So when you go to the bars and things, I have a cup of tea every morning without fail in the bar next to my daughter's school. So we arrive really early after dropping off.
They give you a cup of tea there?
I buy a cup of tea in the bar. And they've got black tea, which is what PG Tips is black tea. But the problem is the strength is always the same. You've got one tea bag in this tiny little pot, which just makes one cup of tea.
Yeah.
And it takes you a good 5 minutes and a bit of stirring and that just to get it a little bit brown, you know. Whereas you get one of the PG Tips, you stick a tea bag in there, within seconds it's like, you know, it's brown and it's got flavor and everything. Yeah, so that's just one of those things. But again, if you do the opposite way around, you go to England and you're Spanish and you want a decent cup of coffee, the coffee in England is, in a rule, is absolutely dire.
Isn't it getting awful. Better?
We've got a lot more chains now, so you've got a lot of Starbucks, Costa Coffee, and things like that. And I think a lot more restaurants and bars now started using proper coffee machines and everything. But in general, it's like here. In general, just talking generally, the coffee is awful in England.
Yeah, you don't really have a coffee culture.
No. To be honest, I think probably over the last sort of 30 years, every year people are drinking more and more coffee in the UK and less tea, probably. Mm. But I think at home, probably the majority still drink tea, and it's coffee normally when you're out and about. And
yeah, have a cup of tea at home. That's it. Yeah,
espressos are probably the old next
espresso.
The capsules.
That's right. Yeah,
that's probably increased the amount of coffee drinking in the UK because I think a lot of people just didn't like really the instant coffee.
Yeah, they didn't like.
But you used to making cups of tea, and you don't want to get a big machine in your house or percolator and start making coffee. I just don't think people were interested in that. So
The old instant coffee, international roast.
Yeah,
those things that you used to get Nescafe,
Gold Blend or whatever it was called.
Gold Blend
always is advertised on the TV. Some corny advert.
That's right. Yeah, but nowadays, as you said, you get the old Nespresso machine and the little pods or little capsules or whatever they call them, and the coffee's probably not too bad. So
most people tend to like that.
Have a decent coffee.
I bet you within sort of 10 years. We're still doing one of these podcasts. We'll be talking about how the pod thing is, the capsules have disappeared.
Because of the environment?
Environment. I think they're going to get banned at some point.
You reckon?
Yeah. Mm. It's like the tea bags. Shopping bags. Plastic shopping bags. I mean, they're banning them everywhere now. If you want them, you have to buy them. I think they're gradually going to get rid of them completely and you only have biodegradable ones available and then paper. And it's all going backwards towards paper and things. Or reusable bags. I think the same things are going to happen with these capsules. Yeah. I think they're going to either start making the machines and having reusable capsules, which you can fill up, or they're just going to ban it completely because I think the amount of aluminium they're using.
Yeah, they take too long to break down.
Yeah.
I saw there was something on the paper or the TV the other day. I think it was 100 years for one of those pods what's it called? To
degrade.
Degrade, is it?
Well, it's a
biodegrade, yeah. So, a long time, yeah. Most likely they will ban them, and they're everywhere now. I mean, everybody seems to have a machine at home, a Dolce Gusto or an espresso machine, and another problem for the environment. It's just, you can't win. You can't win. All right, now we'll move on. He had another comment about something else, but we'll move on to another comment. Now, another video that I have, which is called The Pros and Cons of Moving to Spain. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Some of my pros and cons that I went through a few years ago. I'll probably do another video on that topic in the next few months as well to update it a little bit for 2019 standards. Anyway, I got a comment from a guy called Dez who said, everything I said in the video is not true. The weather is the most important factor in Spain. If it was freezing cold, no one would visit the country. The costas are full of people that are just looking for the sun, basically. Spain is full of criminals, mafia, pickpockets, scams in restaurants, car hires, etc. And all properties in Spain look like prisons with iron bars on the doors. Why? Because it's full of thieves. Now, Des obviously is having a bad day, not enjoying Spain if he's here or had a bad holiday or whatever, but... yeah, I think there's more to Spain than the sun, and we've gone through this in various videos. I mean, I can understand that the costas are full of older people, let's say, that are looking for sun because they've lived in the UK all their life, or they've lived in Norway, they've lived in a country where the sun is scarce, and they want to improve their quality of life, so they move to a place where there's sun. But Spain is more than the costas.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you only have to look at the amount of British expats, immigrants, however you want to call them, in Madrid. We've got quite a few people here from all walks of life, all different jobs, all different types of people. Their interests are different, different ages. It's a really varied immigrant population, I think, in Madrid.
All over the country, because you go to places like Galicia and you bump into English people that are living there, Asturias, you come across people there.
You certainly don't go up north for the sun, do you?
I mean, no,
it's very similar weather to the UK up the north, especially in the winter.
That's it.
You're probably going to get better sun days, I suppose.
In the summer months.
In the summer for a while, but... I mean, we went to Galicia last year. We were there for a week, and it rained every single day, and that was in July. It's very similar to the UK when it's summer wise, and you still bump into a lot of British people up there, or
absolutely,
from all other countries in Europe, a lot of European countries. So I don't think it's all sun. People like the Spanish way of life. They like the bars. They like the tapas. They like being able to have a walk down the street and grab a caña on the way. It's not just sun.
It's a lot more relaxed here when it comes to being able to get a drink. You know, you don't have to go through, you don't have to wait for the pubs to open, and there's no closing times and all of those things as well. Restaurants are a lot more informal, I find. You know, kids are better treated at restaurants if you're traveling with kids.
He's got a point when it comes to the majority of people that do go to the coast are going to the coast because of the sun, but it's not just because of the sun. If that was the case, why don't we have half a million Brits living on the coast of Morocco?
It's exactly the same. It's Mediterranean coast.
The north
of Morocco.
Yeah,
is exactly the same as the south of Spain.
Yeah, so obviously there's a very different way of life in either country, and people prefer the Spanish. You get British people living on the coast of Italy. Of course you do. There's the thing, the Brits like a virus, we everywhere. spreading across the world. But basically, Spain is very popular for other things as well. Mm. So the mix of the sun and other things are very popular. And the Brits as a rule like the Spanish people a lot.
Well, I think it
seem to be replicated in the opposite direction. I think the Spanish don't particularly like the British at all.
I tell you that's a good point, because there are places where you would think that you were living in parts of the UK.
Yeah.
So,
Benidorm, for example.
Well, part of Benidorm, right? Some places in Malaga as well.
Yeah.
And the British people that live there, they're living there because the Spanish people are virtually allowing them to live there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're not coming out every day and protesting. They're not coming out at the Spanish people, they're not coming out painting graffiti on people's houses telling you to go home.
No.
You know? They're quite tolerant of people living in their country.
Yes, very much so, I think.
Do you know what I mean?
I think as a rule, the Spanish are really tolerant.
So you've
had to be, because, the government basically marketed Spain to Britain a few decades ago, and were encouraging the British to come here, buy property.
British and other European countries.
Yeah, but it was really
well.
Marketed in Britain a lot, and I think in Germany as well. It was very highly marketed in both countries, and that's why we've got such an influx. And then it become a similar situation with Sweden as well, and Denmark, and the areas north of Europe as well. And all of a sudden, you've just got an influx of people that have come over, and they've taken advantage of the cheaper property. And
yeah. Because it is a bit cheaper than those other countries as well.
It used to be a lot cheaper. That's the thing. It used to be a huge difference.
It's changed now because of the euro, yeah. Probably. But you can come from a northern European country with your pension and live well in the south with the sun. And as I said again, Spanish people let you live.
Yes.
You know, they're not, you know, slashing your tires because they see you as a, yeah. You know. Which could happen with other immigrant groups. I mean, in Almeria, we saw that because there's a lot of Africans living there, the people are up in arms and voting for right-wing parties. But they're not doing that in other places where there's lots of British people or lots of Norwegians or lots of Germans in Mallorca, as we said the other day. You know, so they are fairly tolerant in that regard. People do complain because the price of housing does go up. If you're a young person living in Malaga and you can't afford to buy a house because somebody from the north of Europe's got more money than you, I mean, you could get pissed off with that as well.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. I mean, I think it's a very valid point as well. It changes the economy of the area, but it also changes on the positive front as well. You've got more jobs there as well. It is all based around tourism, but it does create a lot of jobs. I think there's pros and cons of having immigrants come to your country, depending on where you are and what sort of life you want. But it's actually been marketed for immigrants to come over and buy properties here. So, you know, the Spanish people just didn't have a choice back then. They had to put up with these people coming over because the government were actually inviting them over, basically. Mm. And I think the Spanish people are very welcoming in most cases. And I know the British people in general really like the Spanish people. In general, they love the Spanish people. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be reciprocated. And, a lot of the Spanish people don't like the British at all, especially on the coast. But it's because we do get... the bad tourists come over as well, and again, it's because of the publicity and the marketing that goes directly for these people. Come to Benidorm, we can give you a room for 20 euros a night, drinks at a euro a shot, and of course you're not going to get families come over for these offers. You're going to get teenagers that are just starting to go out drinking and going to have a good time, and they've got no money. So you've got this cheap offer. They go over there and you get the bad tourism.
That's it. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, and the other thing he mentions is the bars on the window, the security aspect. Now, I'll be honest, there's bars on the windows of this house, and I think you said that you don't have bars on your windows.
Nope.
But probably if we walked around the neighbourhood... 80% maybe?
The majority of them do.
Majority.
But the ones that don't tend to have shutters like mine.
Or some type of security glass.
Yeah, I mean, we as soon as we got the house, we put in the best security system there was as well.
Oh, you got an alarm.
The alarm and everything else and all the windows and doors and stuff. Yep. You do that, but it's not because you're expecting to get robbed. It's not because... there's a huge problem with mafia and thieves and everything else that was it Des that mentioned?
Yeah, Des, yeah.
That's not the reason. The thing is, the majority of housing in most of Spain are flats. So, of course, if you've got a splattering of normal houses, well, not actually normal houses.
Houses.
Of houses around, they're more vulnerable because of how they're built. So, of course, if they're the most vulnerable, if there are any thieves around, they're going to aim for the most vulnerable places. And, of course, people that live in houses, in theory, also have more money. The thieves think, they've got a house, they've paid a lot of money for this house. They're going to have more money than people living in a small flat.
Yep.
So they get targeted more often. But I think it's got to a point now where there's a lot more housing being built in Spain. There are a lot more houses in Spain compared to a long time ago. Not so many flats and more houses. And I think it's just a tradition. People keep putting bars on the windows, but with the modern technology, the new doors, new windows and things that people are putting, it's not maybe not necessarily quite as important as what it used to be, I think. But
yeah, well, I remember when we first moved in here, the first two people to knock on the door, one was an alarm company, Prosegur.
Yeah.
And the second was a guy that made bars for the windows. So those are the first two people that are going to be knocking on your doors when you get given the keys to a house.
Yeah.
And they, you know, you say, well, if these guys are knocking on the on your windows, maybe there is a problem with crime. And there is a bit of a negative that they do give you the, you know, when you talk to these security guys, they say, oh, no, you've got to put an alarm in your house. I mean, that's their business. I mean, let's be honest. Oh, you've got to put an alarm in. Revis has got some of the highest crime in the area, blah, 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 blah. And you end up going down that line a lot of the times. And, you know, this security, these security companies are just cruising around looking for clients all the time.
Yeah.
It's one of the first things. So it is a big business in Spain. And actually, Prosegur Home Security is a huge company.
It's a big company, yeah. I'm with Direct.
Securitas Direct.
Securitas Direct, which is another big, big company.
Absolutely.
But the thing is I think I got the alarm as soon as we got into the house, we got the alarm. And it was basically just for peace of mind more than anything else.
Yeah, well, you're there with your family, right?
Yeah, exactly. But nine times out of 10, there's someone in the house all the time anyway. We don't actually put the alarm on that much. I think I'll probably put the alarm on more when I go and take the dog out for a walk than I do any other time, because one of the only times the house is actually empty. But it does give you peace of mind knowing that you've got an alarm. If you do go away for a weekend, you've got the alarm on. You know you're not going to arrive home and the house has been burgled, because you're going to find out earlier. Yeah. So it's not as if you're going to walk in and find the house burgled. The alarm's going to go off and you're going to know.
That's it.
And you can send someone around there. It's not going to be sitting there for 3 days with broken windows or something without you knowing about it. So I think it's just peace of mind, really. But
in this particular part of Madrid, you know, we're 20 kilometers away from the center of Madrid, so we're not actually living in the big metropolis there. But there's a big police presence there. We've got a local police here, and we've also got a civil guard station, which has 120 officers patrolling 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I don't know how many patrols they have out at once, but they're probably minimum 3-4, maybe even five patrols. And there's you always, you know, you go for a drive somewhere, you always see some type of police everywhere.
Yeah, you've just got to drive through Rivas and you'll see the police somewhere or other.
That's it. So yeah, I mean, it's not
doesn't do the vehicle checks and on the three entrances to Rivas as well.
Well, they do that because of people that, you know,
drink driving,
and you know, Spain had a terrorist threat for a long time as well, so that was sort of something that they used to do. And
but I think they're also trying to catch the people who do come to Rivas to steal.
Well,
aren't always people that actually live here.
Yeah, so people come in.
Yeah, they come in from nearby areas. The place that gets blamed most of the time, Cañada Real, which is just next to Rivas. And people come here and they come in vans, and they I think there's been issues with car batteries being stolen a lot in Rivas, which is
weird. You know, I mean, I've heard of stories that, you know, you take your kid to school and a lot of ladies would leave their handbags on the front seat, and you can sometimes see, you know, broken glass at the front of the schools where people are deliberately waiting for those things to happen. So, you know, those petty type crimes can be a bit of a problem sometimes. The white van thing as well is that also because there's an industrial area here, the Guardia Civil seem to clamp down on white vans. I mean, I know you drive a white van, so I don't know if you've been targeted, but
I've been stopped a few times, but I mean, as soon as they see that you've got all the documentation, that you just...
So there's a lot of dodgy people seem to be driving around in white vans, you know. I don't know whether it's just me, but you do see a lot of... the scrap metal collectors are driving around in white vans. In the industrial area, as I said, maybe there's a, you know, that's an area where there is a bit of crime, you know.
It's always going to happen. You're not going to have a population of 80,000-90,000 people and not have any crime in it.
Well, that's
it's always going to happen. But I don't think it's a necessarily massive problem in Rivas. It has been on the increase a bit recently, I think, the crime rate. but I wouldn't say it's a huge problem in Rivas at
the moment. That's it.
It's fairly controlled.
Yeah, and the other thing he says here is that politicians are as corrupt as F. I won't say the word. They'll sell you a piece of land even though it's illegal. Yeah, that's happened in the past. And everyone that's praising your biased blog is Spanish. That's not true. Statistics don't say that. Majority of people are not Spanish. They're looking at these videos. But I have to admit that it's better than living in Australia, says Des.
How bad is Australia? Well, if he said that about Spain, how bad is Australia?
Australia, he says that if you go away from a city or a town, you'll never be seen again. That's it. It's a dangerous country, Australia. The outback. Get taken by a crocodile. Get taken by a shark. You never know what's going to happen to Ninja you down koala. There. But anyway, must have had a bad day. All right, now we'll move on. Hi, guys. We're teachers. Now, I saw that you answered this question as well. Since you're teachers, I wonder if you can give me some advice about being able to speak Spanish. He says he can read it, he can write it, and the listening skills are okay, but the grasp, he can't grasp the speaking part at the moment of English, but he can't grasp the speaking part of Spanish. That's always going to be the hardest part about learning a language, but I think you said that join a club or something.
Yeah, to be honest, I had the complete opposite problem to him. I didn't have any classes in Spanish at all when I got here. I'd never spoke any word of Spanish in the UK at all. I learned French and German back home. So when I got here, all I learned was the speaking part.
Yeah.
And then I eventually had to
learn to write.
Yeah. So for me, the best way for me to have learned Spanish right at the beginning was basically getting friends that were Spanish that I didn't speak English. Yeah. It's quite important. And also joining a club. I mean, obviously, I play cricket, so we tend to speak English at the cricket club. But if you go and join a football team, maybe basketball, or maybe something completely different, a book club or something, anything.
A bridge club.
Yeah, anything, really. Just something which means you've got the majority of the people that are there are speaking in Spanish.
That's it.
And you have no choice, because if a few people will speak in Spanish and they don't speak English, and they're not interested in speaking English, then the general social rules, if you like, are that you speak in the language that everyone understands, which in Spain would be Spanish.
Absolutely.
So you've got no choice but to speak Spanish. And it is hard at the beginning, but you pick it up very quickly. And that's what happened to me. In Mallorca, it was impossible for me to speak Spanish. Every time I tried to speak Spanish, someone answered me back in English, German, or Mallorquin.
Yeah, yeah.
So as soon as I got here, within 6 months, I was not grammatically correct, but yeah, I was fluent.
Well, that's one of the problems that you can have is that you're trying to learn a language. Somebody sees that you're an English speaker, and they answer you back in English, which can be quite frustrating.
Yeah.
But the other person is just trying to maybe make it a little bit easier for you.
And or try to practice themselves.
That's the other point. So it's always good to try to find somebody who doesn't want you as a possible source to learn English. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Because then you're going to have trouble. And what I've found is we spoke about this before, but once you establish a relationship in a particular language, it's very difficult to break that relationship.
It takes time.
The language,
as well.
I mean, sorry.
When I first met my wife, I spoke no Spanish at all.
No.
So we
but
started.
But now, speaking. Now, what do you speak?
We speak more Spanish between us. We now speak more Spanish than English.
Okay.
But
so you've changed.
Yeah, we've changed. But I think that's because of our situation. We spoke English the majority of the time for a good number of years at the beginning of the relationship, probably the first 6-7 years, and then my wife started working for us for a multinational company. She speaks English all day at work, and when she gets home, she doesn't want to speak English as much. So she was starting to speak more Spanish. I spoke Spanish fluently then anyway. So we ended up sort of speaking more Spanish than we do English. But because we've got the kids, I always speak to the girls in English.
Yeah.
So we sort of like, we have a very weird conversation, always. Yeah, I'll say, ¿qué tal? ¿Cómo estás? Yeah, I'm fine. How are you? ¿Has hecho mucho en el trabajo hoy? yeah, sí, he hecho bastante. I did this and this and that. And also, you realize after a couple of minutes, I'm starting a sentence in English and finish it in Spanish. And then, yeah. And we don't even realize we're doing it.
It's completely mixed now.
Very weird. Yeah, very weird. Yeah,
a little bit mixed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that is, I mean, you know, if you, I don't know where Adam Dayami, I think is his name here. I don't know where he lives, but if he's living in a city like Madrid, obviously it's going to be easy to find people that only speak Spanish, and as you said, those groups. If he's living on one of the in the coastal areas or the Canary Islands, you know, it's going to be a little bit more difficult. But in Madrid, he shouldn't have problems to find people. And you can also have like exchange groups where you find people that speak English for an hour, and then you speak Spanish for an hour, so you can practice that way. So there are ways that you can do it. But I think it's also good. When I was learning Spanish, I found that speaking to myself sometimes was quite handy as well.
Reading out loud helps.
Reading out loud, speaking to you, found, you know, speaking to yourself, thinking about, trying to think in the language as well. So, you know, what would you say in that particular situation? So I'd be walking the dog and I'd be thinking, el perro ha hecho caca, you know, all of the, you know, things like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so just practice it in your mind. Yeah.
That's it. But when you find friends that are willing to accept your Spanish for what it is, and you know they're going to be there to try and help you learn and all of those things, I think that's when you
and the other
your
thing
speaking
is, I mean,
skills get better.
If he's on the coast, make sure that he's doing the majority of the everyday routines in Spanish. So if you need to go shopping, go to the supermarket, talk to the butcher, talk to the guy in the fish counter, the fishmonger. Talk to them. You know, what do you recommend? How would you cook that? But yeah, talk in general. Even if you're not even don't even care, it's a way of practicing, and they'll speak to you in Spanish.
Yeah.
You know, just general things. But you need to immerse yourself in the language if you're going to pick it up a decent level. You need to immerse yourself in the language one way or another.
That can also be a little bit daunting as well, though. If you don't, when you speak a language, confidence is quite important. I remember when I was first learning Spanish, so you know, a long time ago now, but you get embarrassed a lot, you know, and
you're always going to say something stupid.
But it all depends on the level of embarrassment that you're willing to be at. Because I mean, if you're very proud, you don't like making mistakes.
I just didn't care. If I make a mistake, people laugh at you, and that's
the point I'm trying to say.
If you don't
give a stuff, you learn a language a lot quicker because you laugh at the mistakes. But if you're somebody who, you know, doesn't like to make mistakes, and you get a little bit, you know, you get a little bit angry when you make, you know, simple mistakes, because learning a language is not easy. And I've seen people that are absolute geniuses at other things, and they have trouble to learn a language, you know.
I think we mentioned it on a previous podcast as well. It's everybody's built in a different way.
That's it.
No one's going to be perfect in everything, and that's one of the biggest problems I think in the education system. They're pushing all the kids to learn at the same level, the same speed.
English,
it just doesn't happen. Subjects. And there's going to be some kids that are going to be absolutely brilliant in English, and others that have been in the same class, the same amount of years, studying exactly the same material, and they can't put a sentence together because their just brain's not switched on that way. And it takes them a lot longer to learn. Yet in maths, they might be an absolute genius. And I've got some of my students have been like that. And you know, they've just got to be in a more of a comfortable environment, for example, to learn English. And I think that makes a big difference. Being comfortable. So just be comfortable with yourself, and don't get cross when you make a mistake. Don't get upset when people correct you. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Accept their critique and learn from it.
That's right. So. Because you're always going to make mistakes. I mean, you still make mistakes now. You're going to make mistakes with, you know, ser and estar, for example, with like people do in English with like and as, for example. Yeah. You know, it's those things. People make mistakes. But the most important thing is you just keep at it. Keep at it. Keep at
don't
it.
Don't give up.
Don't give up. Don't give up. Don't don't give up. Famous song a few years ago. Kate Bush, was it?
Oh, I don't know.
Don't give up. Anyway, we'll move on. Now, another person here, Hisoka. Hisoka del Typhoon. I don't know whether that is the person's real name or not, but they said, I'm not satisfied with the private healthcare of Sanitas. Now, for those of you who don't know the Spanish health system, it is a huge public system where the majority of the population are covered. And I say the majority because the people that don't use the public system are the ones that have decided to take on private healthcare with companies like Sanitas or Adeslas or... Can you think of another one?
There's one we're going to see as well, Cygnus or something like that.
I don't know, but there's three or four. There's quite a few. I don't know how many there are exactly. Mafre maybe do healthcare. I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But Sanitas is the big one. I think Sanitas is connected with Bupa in the UK and Australia as well, Bupa. But the concept of private healthcare here is completely different to the system in Australia, for example. In Australia, the majority of people seem to have private healthcare. The public system is if you don't have private, whereas here the majority are in the public system and the private healthcare system is quite limited.
Yeah.
All of the good doctors apparently go into the private system and they work in the public all of the good doctors, let me say, go into the public system, and then maybe in the afternoons they work in the private system, I don't know. But the private healthcare system in Spain is secondary to the public one.
Yeah.
Do you have private?
I've got private. I mean, I've got it now because, first of all, when I became self-employed, I got the private health care anyway. I think it was just a backup, really.
How much do you pay a month?
I couldn't tell you now. It's about €50 a month. Okay.
So now that's the key. So if you're paying €50 a month, which is more or less is what that's not expensive.
No, not at all. You can get a lot more.
More expensive
healthcare.
But for those 50, you're going to get probably access to a private doctor, maybe to a private hospital.
Basic healthcare, yeah.
That's it. So, but it, what I'm saying is, it's not expensive compared to the other one because for the other one you pay a lot more money, right? And a lot of people I've heard is that if they have a serious problem, they always go to the public system.
Yep.
So the private healthcare system, if you want some type of, what's it called, when like elective type surgery, like if you've got a dodgy knee and you don't want to wait a year in the public system, you go to the private one. So it comes in handy for those things.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big... I mean, the public healthcare here is fantastic. I think Spain's really good public healthcare. The only problems I've ever had with the public health care is the waiting time.
The waiting times, but that's always going to be a problem in a public
anywhere,
system.
I think, yeah.
But the private health care is not as developed as it is in Australia, let's say. I don't know how it works in the UK, but in
I've never had private health care in the UK, comment on that. But it has been around a long time, and I know people who have had private health care in the UK, and they've been really happy with it, but they paid a lot of money for it.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's another point. So in Australia, private healthcare is quite expensive, whereas here it's relatively cheap. So, I mean, I could do a comparison right now. You know, go to a site in Australia, put in the details, you know, my age and so forth, and I don't think I'd be paying more than, you know, for my age, I don't think I'd be paying more than €75 a month here for a decent coverage.
Yeah.
But in Australia, I think I'd be paying a lot more for that. So that's one of the things. And it's an interesting point because I was reading the paper this week and it said Britons living in the EU call on May to secure healthcare for pensioners. Now, that's an important point because when you're young, you don't really think about healthcare. You don't think about these things. But as soon as you start getting into your, 50s, 60s, 70s, obviously healthcare starts to become a priority. And that's one of the things that Brexit is causing a little bit of worry for a lot of people because, you know, they want access to good healthcare and you can get that in Spain. You can get good healthcare in Spain.
Yep, right.
So if you are planning on moving to another country or a Spanish-speaking country, you know, maybe you're thinking of going to a place like Ecuador or somewhere like that, I mean, check out the hospital systems, check out the public systems because in Europe these things are normally pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. And that goes back to the points we were making earlier on. People don't just come here just for the sun. They come here because they know that the way of life they've enjoyed in other countries, they can still enjoy here.
That's it.
And they've got access to healthcare and things like that, whereas maybe in other countries the healthcare isn't going to be as good quality. They might not have the services available for what you need in certain parts of the country because it's more rural. Or I think... Spain is popular because it's got everything that everyone needs.
Yeah, it does. That's right. Yeah, I think it has. It has that good health system. You know, you can. It does have pension agreements with other countries, and so it is one of those things. And a lot of people were coming down, you know, here to have operations because they weren't free in the country of origin, but they were free down here. I think they've stopped that now. But that was something that was going on for a few years. People would come down to Spain and have a hip replacement surgery that maybe wasn't covered in their country of origin, or you had to pay money for it, you know. But going back to the question here, private healthcare mainly for people that just don't want to deal with the waiting lists on the other ones, and elective surgery, you know, you're playing tennis and you've got tennis elbow or something, and you want to get it fixed quickly. The public system is not for you, but for any other, for example, somebody that gets a serious problem here, you wouldn't hear of them going through the private system. They'd
stick with the private. The majority of the Spanish stick with the public system because they think it's really good. They're right. It's good.
That's it. I mean, if you need cancer treatment or any of those more serious things, obviously you'd want to probably go through the public system in Spain. But anyway, so we'll wrap it up there for the day. John, anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, we can leave it for next week.
You've been going for 40 plus minutes again this week, so I think that should be enough. So questions or comments, leave them in the section below. Thanks, John, for your participation again.
No problem.
We'll be back again next week. Questions or comments, as I said, section below. Download the podcast on iTunes, Spotify. We're on as well now. We're on all of the major podcasting platforms. Watch the video here. Give it a thumbs up if you liked it. We'll see you next week. Hasta luego.